You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
All right. We are here. We are here. And there's Micah. What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Live Free, Think Free. We do this every week, generally Wednesday or Thursday. Today, it's Thanksgiving. I was about to say it's Halloween. It's Thanksgiving in the United States, and I'm in Mexico, but we're celebrating here, too, with friends. Micah and I got a little bit of time before we run off to stuff our faces and hang out with people we may or may not like, and so we figured we'd talk to you for a little bit. So we're here with Micah and myself doing this show. We've been doing this since 2011. For those of you who might not have heard, you can go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. There you go.
I'm always happy to be here, man. Always happy to do another episode and talk to people and see the comments and take the calls, see how they engage with us. And I love it that, you know, our audience is so flexible. We just drop in and run through different stuff, and they jump in. They offer commentary. They're quick on their feet, and I appreciate that. Thankful for all of them being there. I'm thankful for KPFT giving us the opportunity for all these years now to broadcast on FM and HD2 and have access through that to, you know, a much larger audience for these ideas and for the comments that we receive. And so on. So I know, we, like you said, we just plopped in today. And I sometimes, you know, I think we're a little bit more regular on our broadcast. But I'm happy, and like you said, we got people coming in now. So
we're excited. We're live over off Rockfin, off YouTube, and Odyssey at the Conscious Resistance. The only place we're live on Facebook right now is also the Conscious Resistance. We're trying to get back on our pages, but until then, you can always find the archives at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find Live Free, Think Free on Spotify if you do that whole thing, and wherever else you listen to podcasts. So we're going to be with you just about straight hour. As I said, both Micah and I got lunch, dinner plans, so we're going to move on in. And I want to start with one big story that caught my attention. It caught my attention, Micah, because The Washington Post dropped this yesterday morning, the day before Thanksgiving. And, you know, typically it's like a policy of governments and even sometimes media when they release stories on the weekends or late night Friday or something where they don't really think too many people are going to pay attention to it. Now, that doesn't always happen in the age of the internet, but it's definitely an older practice from, like, you know, maybe newspapers and such. So this is coming from the Washington Post. For those of you who are looking online, it's titled "Vaccinated People Now Make Up a Majority of COVID Deaths." Now, one thing I'm going to show you real quick, Michael, what's interesting about this is a capture, though. So those of you who know the Wayback Machine, archive.org, you can see this was published November 23rd, yesterday at 7 a.m. This is the original title, "Vaccinated People Now Make Up Majority of COVID Deaths." We're going to break that down, but I just want to show you what this title is called now. Now it's called "COVID is No Longer Mainly a Pandemic of the Unvaccinated. Here's Why." And, you know, slight change, right? But to me, the original title gets you directly to the point. You know, it gets you right where you need to be to understand what this whole thing is about. And my guess is maybe somebody thought that it was a little too blunt, a little bit too direct. So they changed it to "COVID is no longer mainly a pandemic of the unvaccinated." Although I would argue it never was, and the evidence has shown that. Either way, that's what WAPO is representing. Now let's see what Mackenzie Beard, this analysis for the Health 202 for Washington Post, says. It says that, let's move down here, "It's no longer a pandemic of the unvaccinated. For the first time, a majority of Americans dying from the coronavirus received at least the primary series of the vaccine. 58% of coronavirus deaths in August were people who were vaccinated or boosted, according to an analysis conducted for the Health 202 by Cynthia Cox, vice president at the Kaiser Family Foundation." And I will again say, this is not the first analysis of publicly available data, because by this point, you know, Micah, people are tracking deaths in different countries that have been getting the shots for now over a year and sort of tracking what's been taking place after that. And there are other people pointing at similar things. I have an article I could pull up right now from Massachusetts where people are looking at Massachusetts post-COVID death, or, you know, post-COVID shots, like deaths and what are the cases. And it's showing an increase in deaths of the vaccinated. And so, you know, it is what it is. It says, "This is a continuation of a troubling trend that has emerged over the past year. As vaccination rates have increased and new variants appeared, the share of deaths of people who were vaccinated has been steadily rising." I think that needs to be repeated. As vaccination rates have increased, the share of deaths of people who were vaccinated has been steadily rising. In September 2021, vaccinated people made up just 23% of COVID deaths. In January and February, it was up to 42%, according to their clients. And again, they say clearly, we can no longer say this is a pandemic of the unvaccinated. But they go on to make the claim that being unvaccinated is still a major risk factor, although most of the people apparently dying are vaccinated. It's kind of an odd statement to make. Either way, I just want to throw that out there. Not a huge story, but I do think it's one that deserves our attention because, I mean, how long have we been being told, Micah, that the shots are safe? There's, you know, the idea that anybody's being harmed or that, you know, they're not being protected from their shots is conspiracy theory. It's crazy. And now the Washington Post says it. So I guess it's okay to say it now.
I don't know. I think at one time we were told it'll stop the spread, which I've also been told and heard it was confessed that they never tested that it would stop the spread. Okay. Then we heard that it will stop or it'll stop you from, you know, dying. It'll stop you from dying. Let's get real. And then it'll be a symptom mitigator. And then that's been contested. And here, this simply obviously contests the whole first fear, ad that it'll stop you from dying. You know, this becomes contested. And I start, you know, how far up will those numbers go? That's another thing to maybe wonder after a while. What happens if people who are dying of COVID eventually become 70% of them are vaccinated, 80% of them are vaccinated? What would be the meaning of that? Would that be something more than the fact that we're at 58%? I'd start to wonder, and I'd start to wonder also, what percentage of the population are these percentages that are dying? So I just wonder about this because I think those metrics would reveal quite a bit that we're not just seeing in this one simple. Because if let's just imagine that the whole population had been vaccinated, or 90% or 70%, you know, I don't know. It's just things that my mind comes to wonder about. And you know, this isn't from some conspiracy website or whatever you want to say, you know, this is from the Washington Post it's from the Wall Street Journal. Yeah,
it was Washington Post.
Okay. Washington Post. And I think these are the hard facts that a lot of people that get entrenched in positions early on, no matter what their motivation, it becomes hard for them to accept. And I think even today, if you went out and just made a blunt post like that headline was before, you'd probably get attacked for stating a fact.
100% absolutely. And that's why I wanted to bring it up, is because I think it's important for us to think about these things. And for anybody who out there is hearing this, I know a lot of people are going out for Thanksgiving today, right? With family and friends. Maybe you want to, you know, I know there's so many people who are joking about like, oh, I'm going to bring this up during the holidays. I saw a meme yesterday. Where was it? It was a friend who was saying, I hope my family's ready. And it was like a pumpkin pie, but like the top. Oh yeah, the top, like the crust, says unvaccinated and ready to talk politics. And so it says pass the devil's egg. Sorry. So I mean, just again, if there's an opportunity and somebody comes up and somebody, you know, says something about those unvaccinated people, you might want to send them that link and see what they think about it.
You know, can we talk about this for a minute? Because things are reversed, as things are revealed, I should say, you know, In the haste of pre 9/11 or post 9/11, right there, in the haste of all these sort of war scenarios, in the haste, people just kind of run with the herd. A lot of people, or at least it feels that way. And I could be wrong, but it seems that way. And then facts are revealed that people may have been saying, what if, not knowing that this was the fact, their what if, their hypothetical. And then their hypothetical is validated. But, you know, we still have that same pattern to human nature and social reality. So I'd like us to not let it be a chance to bludgeon the fearful, knee-jerk reacting, triple mask-wearing relatives and contacts that may be triple boosted, you know? I'd like us to not have to beat them over the head with these things, but more have a heart towards helping them to understand that pattern so that they can learn to search for greater knowledge or better rationality in the decisions that they make in the future. I think that it'd be real easy, you know, for everyone to just point the finger and it'd be another, you know, divisive thing. So I agree.
I agree.
we need to talk about this stuff, but we need to also have an eye towards that. And I don't know exactly how to do it, but I think it's with patience and love and understanding and maybe realizing that they came from a very frightened position, probably. I mean, to give them the charity of that.
I agree. Yeah, and I'm glad you're taking a moment longer for this, Micah. I'm going to include this in the show notes for anybody who wants to see it. So we got the original article, vaccinated people now make up majority of deaths. I agree with you that I don't think this should just, you know, we go to the other extreme and now we go attack the other people because they push this. I don't think there should just be forgive and forget. But I do think there is some, you know, some danger of just going to the other extreme.
There's no amnesty for authoritarians.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. We talked about a week or two ago about this call for amnesty from the Atlantic, that journalist there who was like, oh, we should all just have amnesty for people who made wrong decisions because we're in a rush. Well, this other article, I just want to mention, we won't get into it. I won't read it, but anybody who wants to see it, the title kind of tells you the argument. It says tribunals would introduce dangers of their own. And there's just this one paragraph. It says, before explaining my opposition to attempts at imposing formal punishment on lockdowners, people in favor of lockdowns in the last 2 years, I note that my argument isn't about forgiveness. While a case can be made to forgive lockdowners, that's not the case that I'll make here. Forgiveness, being personal, is beyond my capacity. To forgive or not is exclusively your call. My argument here is simply a plea to my fellow anti-lockdowners not to call for or to even wish for the imposition of state-imposed sanctions on prominent lockdowners. And basically, this article, which it's only a 7-minute read if somebody wants to check it out, it argues that if there were tribunals or hearings or let's go back and get the people who did this wrong, that it would inevitably become politicized. And, you know, who's to say if we're going to get real justice anyways, right, if there's some sort of tribunals or hearings? But also they said, well, hold on, what if there were some hearings, right, and Fauci and other people are, you know, brought to the table, arrested even, maybe charged with crimes. And then the next pandemic, if that ever comes, they decide to actually listen to the advice they didn't, and they don't lock down and they don't do these things, but people die inevitably, like they will. And then they blame all that for not locking down. And in 10 years, we're having another hearing for the people who didn't lock down from COVID-28 or whatever like that. You know, it's an interesting argument. I think he's overall saying, like, hey, use the court of public opinion. These people should not be allowed to live this down. They should be called out. They should be brought to task for it. But he argues that there's some danger in kind of letting it become a political thing. So I just wanted to mention that since you were, I think, kind of talking similarly.
Yeah. And on that little point, I mean, I think that point's, you know, quite important. But I do think there was a little twist there, because when you go to the future, the hypothetical, the non, what if there's a horrible pandemic and massive amounts of humans die, and then you want to have retribution against those who didn't lock down. I'm not exactly sure that the action's the same, in the sense of at least the government as we know it, or expect it to be, in, you know, the popular mentality. I do not think that if they failed to lock down, it'd be the same as deciding that we knew what was best and forcing everybody through this. It's not the same. You see what I'm saying there? I mean,
no, I agree with you. I think he's just arguing that it could just become a tit for tat thing, like, you know, that it just,
yeah,
like,
totally
continues.
I do think there's something to recognize there, though, because the difference is one thing here is using authoritarian tactics based on misinformation and not, you know, basically, or I shouldn't say miss, but how about we say that it was incomplete at best? Never mind an agenda to sell anything or get people in line or what that might have been. But let's just say they were dumb and mistaken. Well, based on their idea of what they thought was right so much, they were willing to do what they did. And I think that isn't overlooked. Maybe as individuals, we don't hate on them as a neighbor, but maybe I don't ever want them in political office again. And I think that's the sort of thing, that's the non-amnesty. Your cousin, your aunt, your uncle, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister. No, man, they were people who were being told all this stuff by authoritarians who were ready to shut down businesses and force people into all kinds of things. And to recognize that that is the case is becoming more and more the facts on the ground. And that's what needs to, I won't say that they're condemned for their actions, but they just got to find a different job.
I mean, they don't need
yeah, to. Yeah, I agree. People should be at the least fired. And I want to mention that article I was just covering a moment ago. It came from brownstone.org, the Brownstone Institute. They do a lot of great work. If you want to hear more about kind of what Micah's talking about, like really understanding the authoritarian push behind this using science, they have a great article out right now called Totalitarianism and Technocracy, which I encourage everybody to get into. But why don't we go ahead and jump forward, Micah? It looks like we got some interesting Texas news related to the Biden administration. What's this all about?
You know, this thing, I guess the main thing I wanted to talk about and on here is just, you know, everybody would like to think that, you know, this is an absolute green administration and all of that. And there's two points, really. One, that, you know, you got Biden quietly, you know, there's a reason he's quietly doing this. And you've got to ask yourself, why do we got to get permission to export things? You know, maybe that's a little side thing. But yeah, you know, we recently had the climate conference. I heard about it on Democracy Now! Pretty much every day over the last week. But yeah, it turned out that Biden approved this, and that they're really surprised because, you know, it required federal approval. And here's this big old school, you know, power, oil. And, you know, nobody wants to make a big deal about it, but that's the case. And there does, I don't know about you, but, you know, meanwhile, you're talking about emissions cutting and all of that. It just seems to kind of fly in the face of some of the stuff that man's party really seems to push. And I think that's the main thing I wanted to bring up to it. But the seaport, and it's here in Texas, so it could mean some jobs, right? I mean, we got a bunch of oil. The Seaport Oil Terminal hopes to start operations by the end of 2025. When it does, they will initially draw business from less efficient onshore terminals in Houston and Corpus Christi, and over time, it will enable growth in oil production from Texas's oil shale fields and beyond. So, you know, it just sounds like more oil and more, you know, federal approval to export oil. You know, meanwhile, how much are gas prices? And wasn't the same guy trying to get them to slow down? It's like so much, just let's get involved in everything. I mean, it's a huge thing that we could unpack, but I didn't want to any more than say, look at this strange sort of contradiction that we're viewing. If you want to get further into it, I'm down, but that's where I'm at. So I think we move on. I don't know how much y'all saw this one, but this one is, I thought this was pretty good, and it went on. I didn't know it was so in-depth, and this came to us from the Mint Press News here, and it's speaking about how Call of Duty, you know, you hear about, you know, I'm not a gamer. I mean, I've played games, but I don't live that culture, you know what I'm saying? But it turns out that they tell us it's been a matter of public record that it's been happening for a long time that the American spies have penetrated Activision Blizzard games. So it turns out that Snowden revealed that the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, the Department of Defense infiltrated vast online realms such as World of Warcraft, creating make-believe characters to monitor potential illegal activities and recruit informers. Indeed, at one point, there were so many U.S. spies in one video game that they had to create a deconfliction group as they were wasting time unwittingly surveilling each other. I mean, there's government efficiency, right? Surveilling spies, spying on spies in a virtual reality. I don't know. That's kind of whack, you know? I mean, but check it out. You got a CIA agent studying a CIA agent in a virtual reality game with both of them getting paid. That's beyond the pale. I mean, I know it's kind of comical, but let's push on. However, these documents were recently obtained under the Freedom of Information Act by a researcher named Tom Secker, and they were shared, and we discovered this on the Mint Press News. But nonetheless, in 2018, the U.S. Air Force flew a group of entertainment executives, including Call of Duty, Activision, Blizzard producer Coco Franchini, to their headquarters. The explicit reason for doing so was because they wanted to showcase all the new technology, their cool weapons and stuff, and make sure that they were credible advocates for the U.S. war machine. Quote, "We've got a bunch of people working on future blockbusters, think Marvel, Call of Duty, etc., stoked about this trip. That's what one Air Force officer said. And another email notes that the point of the visit was to provide heavy hitter producers with Air Force Special Operations Command immersion focused on special tactical airmen to air ground capabilities. And in the end, what happens is, you know, it all just helps them meet their recruitment numbers. And, you know, you could get into this and just, you might be blown away by how deeply infiltrated these shooter games, various other games, and the whole ridiculously online community is. So I don't know. Let's see.
I'm glad you brought this one up, though, Mike. I apologize. I was muted earlier. What I was saying when I was introducing the story is that this title pretty much confirms what I assume, even though I haven't read it, because I remember reading probably when I was back in high school, so at least 20 years ago, how the military was using some video game to train their soldiers. And it's probably what became the basis for Call of Duty and all these kinds of these games. But I remember that they were already starting to use back in the early 2000s video games as a realistic training way. And then obviously now that I think that kind of lends itself towards people who want to use drones, because the drone operators are sitting in Utah, thousands and thousands of miles away from where they're at, holding a joystick and looking at a screen. You know, it might feel very similar to them if they grew up playing Call of Duty and these kinds of things. So I do think that's important to bring up. And I shared a comment earlier. I was muted, though, but let me go ahead and read this comment. This is from We Can't Afford the Rich over on Odyssey. They say, Happy Thanksgiving from Winnipeg. I say no amnesty ever. This is about COVID. So many people have said they hope I die. And I even had a nurse tell me that if I was in the ICU, he would unplug my respirator to charge his phone. Jerk. Sorry about that. We Can't Afford the Rich. Thanks for tuning in with us today here on Thanksgiving, and hope you are doing well. And yeah, those are the kind of things that people were told.
I think it shows you, you know, I don't want to be too like this. I don't know how prevalent this is. I don't know how many people are like this, but I think it shows you that there's this percentage of society that you just can't trust. And if you didn't know that before, you know, it's a wake up call. So, you know, I think we walk away from this a little
wiser. Hopefully people have woken up from that. You didn't know before. I mean, honestly, I think it really did surprise me. I mean, while we're touching back on COVID for a moment, maybe we'll go to a music break in a few minutes. It did surprise me to some extent to see the lengths that certain people were willing to go. And I mean, we've said this over the years, but friends that you and I know and old friends of this show and friends of the activism that we were involved in, turn their backs on me and probably you or anybody associated with us because of, well, maybe just because we didn't bow immediately to what people were saying.
It was too controversial. Yeah. Go with the flow. The herd's running that way. And, you know, it's really sad to me because some of the people we got connected with and some of the people we even saw there, I'd like to think that they cared about individuals, you know, individuals doing well, individuals. I thought they were caring people. But they, when I see some of this, it's hard to forget that they demonstrated that they were ruthless.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if what We Can't Afford the Rich over in Winnipeg was told, if people felt that way about us, you know, just based on certain things that we may or may not have done just by following our own, you know, bodily autonomy. But it is what it is. And that's why, I mean, that article earlier, there's all this talk of amnesty. Should we have tribunals? What's next? I definitely don't think people should just be amnesty, forgive and forget. I definitely don't think we should empower the state to start going around and targeting people. But we as a people, the court of public opinion, should we try to hold these people's feet to the fire? Absolutely. Should we call for people to lose their job or resign voluntarily if they're willing to? Absolutely. I mean, I think so.
They revealed themselves, man. They revealed what they are, basically. They, through their actions, they showed what they were willing to do. And like, exactly. I'm with you, man, that the ones that had office and used the power for that vision they had that was mistaken, I don't know if I want to trust them because, you know.
No, it makes me, I think, and I really, again, just to kind of wrap this up a little bit and we'll move forward here, I definitely hope that everybody who has lived through the last 3 years, and especially if, you know, because depending on how you lived the last 3 years, your perspective is going to be totally different, right? If you were the kind of person that bought into the propaganda or the people around you and you locked down, you never went out for 2 years, it might have been the most terrifying time of your life. And maybe you did have some people that got sick or got harmed or whatever. Not to say we know what it's from exactly, But that's going to be a different way of life than those of us who chose to live as normal as possible and still see our friends and still go out and enjoy life and things like that, who were upset and who feel like we were wronged by what took place. And these next two stories, I think, they point at the little bit of the bigger picture of where things are headed, right? Because COVID, we've known now for since the beginning almost, that it wasn't about a virus or a pandemic, that there were clearly efforts by governments around the world to take and grab more control. There was efforts for people to get extremely rich off the last couple years, including companies like BlackRock and those companies that are just getting bigger and bigger, buying up more. These are becoming like the heads of everything. And part of that agenda is a push for digital IDs, technology to monitor everything you do, much like we see in China. And now that seems to be confirmed by this latest statement from World Economic Forum, Forum Chairman Klaus Schwab, who, of course, announced the Great Reset in 2020. So what's going on here, Micah? Is he out giving talks again, telling us about the plans, or what's this all about?
Well, I think most people know that in China, everything is more or less controlled by the Communist Party. So somehow this guy gets to go on TV, right? You know, because, you know, he's a rock star, right, to the Chinese people. No, he gets to go on Chinese TV because of his connections with the governments of the world through the World Economic Forum. And I think the main thing to think about here is, first off, I'll cut to the chase. He didn't say how the nations or how China was a model for many nations. OK, let's just say that. But at the same time, this is a man that, you know, we know about the sesame credit system, where the Chinese Communist Party announced a moral ranking system. A moral ranking system. How many times do we point out different morality, different ways to see things in morality? So let's think about that. And in this system that somehow comes from on high, whereby individuals, government organizations, and companies are based on a social credit. So we talked about that and how they can be drawn to environmental and social governance or ESG scores being used by major financial institutions. Does this say the people? Used by the people? No. Used by major financial institutions and global organizations to create a type of credit system designed to influence behavior and transform society. So, you know, think about that. These are people who think they own society. Let's hear a little bit more about Mr. Schwab, right? He says here, stakeholder capitalism. I'm like, whoa. You know, I know capitalism is a very controversial word. But given, you know, just the most fundamental idea of what that means, you know, just the ability, you know, the owners own the means of production, and they may or may not hire people to work for them. It may be a mom and pop shop, or it may be some sort of large corporation. But, you know, that's how it goes. And that's what capitalism, as I understand it. And of course, you can blow that up into much bigger discussion, but he's got this adjective in front, stakeholder. I'm like, huh? So stakeholder capitalism, this is a model, Klaus tells us, that he first proposed half a century ago. Wow, man. Positions private corporations as trustees of society and is clearly the best response to today. He thinks his own idea is the best. Isn't that lovely?
Stakeholder capitalism. Yeah, they love that term. And yeah. The stakeholders, though, they don't include you or me, though.
Exactly. But this isn't about them running their own mom and pop shop. This isn't about them running, you know, their own car company or their own airplane company, oil company, weapons company, pharmaceutical company, whatever it might be. This is about them running society. So what do we got here? A merger of authority, government, and corporate interest, which, you know, less time before he wrote this than then was said to be a word called fascism or corporatism. So he's, in my view, stakeholder capitalism is just a fancy new term for fascism.
For old authoritarianism. Yeah, and that's the thing, is he talked about this. So what he's probably referring to is in 2016, he released his book called The Fourth Industrial Revolution, which was like a big part of the whole stakeholder capitalism model. But he actually originally introduced it in like the 70s at the first World Economic Forum. He put out this thing called the the stakeholder manifesto or something like that. Anyways, needless to say, over the last 50 years leading up to the Great Reset announcement in June 2020, that's the direction we are seeing our world go in, this idea. And like you're saying as well, Micah, they're rebranding. I mean, I think people don't like it, but they are rebranding fascism, and it's becoming now this green authoritarianism. The other thing is where I think you can even see the kind of hint at fascism, whether people understand it or not, is this public-private partnerships, right? So public-private partnerships, working governments and the state together, like, I don't know, there's just so much of what they're about and what they claim. It's clear, it's just putting a new face on the same old thing. There was an author, Rosa Corey, from years ago. She died maybe a year ago. She wrote the book called The Agenda Behind the Green Mask, and was kind of hinting at some of these same things.
One thing I'll say, if you're a longtime listener of our show, this is nothing new to you, this theme. And if you look at it, this theme was present even in the video games article. This theme, it permeates this whole anti-freedom agenda. And if you continue to look for it, you have to, you know, obviously, unfortunately, read writings of fascism. And I think it's better to read Mussolini than to read Hitler, because at least he, you know, put together the ideology of it. And then you'll understand that it's a form of government. It's not just hatred of individuals. It's a form of government. And many people, when it first was developed, just as now, saw it as technologically advanced, the newest, hottest thing that was going to get us to the moon, you know, the newest, hottest thing that was going to solve all the problems. And for a while, it looks real shiny because it's got a lot of endorsements, you know, it's got a lot of support. So I think it's the critical issue, and it's been the critical issue for a long time. When you look under,
it's just in our face now. It's just becoming more and more obvious. I got one more I'm going to add to this kind of theme before we take a quick music break and come back. We're doing a special Thanksgiving episode. Both Micah and I got dinner plans to get to, so we can't be here too long, but we wanted to come just bring you some important stories for today. If you caught us late, you can always go back and watch from the beginning. After the show, I'm going to put all the links at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find every story we're covering, including this one. You know, over the last weeks, the G20 has been meeting, the group of 20 richest, wealthiest nations in Bali, Indonesia. Well, there's been many reports commenting with similar headlines to this one. This is from the Western Standard. G20 leaders signed declaration to create global vaccine passport system. As the group of 20 meeting in Bali wraps up, world leaders signed onto a declaration to build on the successes of COVID vaccine passports with the intention of creating a global verification system to facilitate international travel. So if you thought, you know, that whole thing was over, newsflash, we've been telling you it's not over. The statement reads, quote, "We support continued international dialogue and collaboration on the establishment of trusted global digital health networks as part of the efforts to strengthen prevention and response to future pandemics that should capitalize on and build on the successes of existing standards and digital COVID-19 certificates." So they use the panic and the scare to get you introduced to the idea, get some of them established, lay out some ideas and some foundations, and then things come along. G20, oh yeah, that was a great success. We should build on that. We should continue to expand it. We should move further. They also affirm their support for the World Health Organization's mRNA Vaccine Technology Transfer Hub, which means we're more than likely going to see more of these mRNA-type vaccines being promoted for all kinds of things. So, yeah, Klaus Schwab's over there meeting, talking about China. The G20 is promoting vaccine passports, digital IDs to travel.
Man, Bali's from the beautiful. 2020s. Bali's beautiful, and I bet not one of those fools paid for their own vacation there.
No, they probably didn't, and I doubt they went and actually enjoyed it. They just sat in a bunch of suits inside some stuffy office telling the rest of the world how they should live their lives. They could have been out enjoying Bali.
No doubt. Fortunately, it's a sad day. But hey, you know, I think, you know, one of the things that's become more interesting to me, and I think we'll have increasing this conversation both between you and I and our audience, is what people do with their freedom. Sure, all these horrible things are happening, but what do you do with your freedom? Because if you want to look at it like a struggle, that's what it is. But, you know, it's been an ongoing struggle. And just because some people think it ended with the end of World War II or something, it hasn't ended. But it doesn't mean this whole oppressive form, just because it has the seats of power, has the authority it wants over our lives. Otherwise, they wouldn't fly to Bali and sit in stuffy suits. They'd be out doing their twisted thing or whatever it might be, you know? So, you know, it isn't over. We do have space for freedom.
There's space for freedom, for sure. Yeah, I'm not giving up, and I don't think any of you at home are either. So we're going to go to a quick music break, come back. This is High Res Programmed, and maybe while we're gone over these 2 minutes, think about something you're thankful for. Share it in the comments. We'll share that on the screen, and maybe we'll tell you what we're thankful for, if we can find anything. We'll be right back.
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program.
They want us brainwashed till we have the same thoughts. Say the wrong thing and they'll put us in the same box. One world, one currency, and no God. I won't let them piss on me and tell me that it's raindrops. Lies, where they selling at? Truth, they don't tell us that. I don't care if you a Republican or a Democrat. I ain't hearing what you telling me. We are not the enemy. They pushing their narrative through these Hollywood celebrities. We living in a matrix. Every day the same shit. You don't like the history, you just try to erase it. You don't like something to somebody, you replace it. Everything is sexist. Everything is racist. Every claim is baseless. Everything is tainted. I love my life, but the American dream is so tasteless. Time that we face it. I don't fear no man. Why you think they've been calling these TV shows programs?
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program.
Capitalism got us trapped in a prison. Killing people over Jordans while they laughing and chilling. The liquor store and fast food got you in a bad mood. Our lives politicized, don't really value criminals, lack of citizens, killing all the witnesses. What type of bullshit is this? The world that we living in. There's an app to find love, there's an app to buy drugs, there's no app to find us. While they're spraying our crops, they want you hating the cops, they want you hating your moms, they want you hating your pops. Want us hating each other, that's how they divide and conquer. Sell your soul if you want an easy way to the top. I've been praying to God, I know we're hearing the call. They just play on your emotions, got you feeling it all. It's love over here, not that fake stuff neither. I'll deprogram myself, I don't need you.
Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program. Watch the news, buy that new, follow rules. Eat the fools, copy shoes every day, cause we program. They'll pick what we choose, all the same, who is who. Everything that we do, we program.
You and I are told increasingly we have to choose between a left or right. Well, I'd like to suggest there is no such thing as a left or right. There's only an up or down.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
All right, High Res Programmed. I remembered that from a previous episode, and doing the live stream thing is a little bit difficult. I couldn't just look at the record or the CD like we could in the studio, and I was like, who is that? I wanted to share it with them. And I think that says a lot about our desire to share the music. Is that, you know, you hear it on the radio. I heard it on the radio. I heard High Res, and I had a friend I wanted to share it with, but I had no idea who it was. So I'm glad that Derek shared that. I'm glad for the people that send the music into us. We've received it from all around the world, honestly. And we look forward to exploring more music and art and creative efforts of our audience and the ones that they're connected to. So, you know, you can message us at Live Free, Think Free on Facebook. You can message us at visionarynoise@gmail.com. You could reach out to Derek or I any way you know with anything you got coming up, knowing's coming up, or enjoyed. We want to get into it.
Absolutely. And I want to shout out the people we got live over on Rockfin. What's up, Rockfin? Appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for the tips and the support. If you don't mind giving us some thumbs up over there, we appreciate that. And the folks over on Odyssey, if you want to give us some flames up, we appreciate you guys over there. And some friends on YouTube and Facebook, of course, all of you are much appreciated. We got maybe 15, 20 minutes left, and we'll end with another song. We'll see if we got time for this clip. I want to play Michael. We played it before, but I think it's just so important and so timely with the conversation we're having. But I wanted to mention these two. I know we've got a couple other financial stories to pull up. This one is a little bit of good news. I wanted to get into this last week. We didn't have time, so I'm making sure to hit it today. There are two stories covering a similar theme. which is, as you can see from the title here, another big CBDC flop. For those who don't know, CBDCs are central bank digital currencies. They are very quickly becoming the new trend and new fashion amongst governments around the world who are rolling out CBDC digital currency programs in the next years, 2022, 23, 24. So many governments have announced they're trying it, and some are already trying. Even if it's not specifically a CBDC, it's a digital currency managed by the government. You know, that's pretty much as far away from a private crypto as you can get. So briefly here, this is from Financial Underground.
Sand dollar.
Sand dollar. This one is talking about Nigeria and the e-Naira, Africa's first CBDC. So this one is actually a CBDC. This was coming from the central bankers from Nigeria, which is, by the way, Africa's largest country by population and size of its economy. And they wanted to test this out first in Africa. And according to this article, the jury is in. The e-Naira has been a massive failure, according to Bloomberg, which we got that one pulled up here. Digital currency plan falters as Nigerians defiant on crypto. Less than 0.5% of Nigerians are using digital currency. Government action is required to make success of the e-Naira. And this is, you know, it's a paywall article. So we go to this one. And it basically says that Nigeria has one of the highest Bitcoin adoption rates in the world, number 11 in the country, right? So people are interested in digital currency to some degree, like crypto, Bitcoin. But when it comes to the e-Naira, the CBDC run by the government, they have apparently miscalculated the support for it. And as the Bloomberg article admits, Nigerians' passion for cryptocurrencies doesn't extend to the central bank offering. It also said Nigerians have viewed the e-Naira as a, quote, symbol of distrust in the ruling elite, and that people view the governments as, quote, hostile to them, and therefore they have no interest in anything it introduces. So I think that's a positive thing, you know, that for once.
It's the thing that people forgot about money. It's only as good as you believe in it. You know, and that's one of the things that when they got America off of the gold standard, you know, they're like, oh, the people believe in the government. You know, your savings bonds, all those things are investment in your belief system in the government, that there will be a return, that your dollar will hold up. And apparently in this situation, this government has such a bad rap that their digital dust isn't even worth dust. You're muted.
Sorry. I think one thing that I take away from it is just that, like you said, the trust in the government's not there. So we shouldn't look at the rolling out of the CBDC programs that I was just talking about as a foregone conclusion. You know, I think sometimes in the truth, freedom, whatever community, people see a government announcement and they're like, that's it. It's over. Like, or the Klaus Schwab said, I'm going to own nothing and be happy. I mean, surely that's it, right? There's nothing I can do. I must just give in and accept that's my fate. But that's not really true. I mean, there's so much that we can do. And just because they announce a government program doesn't mean it's going to actually play out in real life that way. I would say Mexico is very similar to Nigeria in that regards, that the government makes pronouncements all the time. Like we saw this during COVID, sometimes people listen, often they don't, and they totally ignore the government and they go about their business, and whatever program they try to launch, it just doesn't take off. Same thing, Guadalajara, city a couple hours away from here, they started this, not a CBDC, but some sort of like digital token, you know, use this and you get points around, and they had made a big deal about it. And many of us were watching, like, oh my God, they're rolling this out in Mexico. And it just didn't catch on. Nobody accepts it. Nobody uses it. You know, it's just like there's a government website for it. It may still be there, but it definitely didn't. You know, the difference from theory to reality was pretty vast. So I think that's important to remember. It doesn't always play out the way they might like.
One thing I think is real interesting is that this is just another evidence of these, you know, the stakeholder capitalists and the these authoritarian and central powers like this. You know, it's just another revelation that they're neither democratic nor capitalist. I mean, come on. Nobody wants to buy their stuff.
No, but they want to force it on you. It doesn't matter if you want it. This is going to be the way you have to operate, right, in the future. And that's why I was posing the question to those who can see on the screen. Will you use government CBDCs? Sometimes I think it's an easy, you feel like, no, heck no, I'm not going to use that. But I encourage everybody to think deeper about that as well, because you got to figure, well, okay, but what happens when everything you're doing right now that you currently spend your money on and the places you go to say that we're only going to take CBDCs, we're only going to take the e-Naira, we're only going to take the Fed coin or whatever.
Because it works. And when it doesn't work, they're not going to use it. It's interesting in Nigeria because they're like, let's see if it'll take off. Why would people change gear? Why would people change lanes? So, you know, you have to have a motivating factor for them to give up one money for a new money. And it seems like in the past they've been managed to, you know, come up with a narrative that convinced enough people to, you know, let go of what now is worth way more than it was when it was in everybody's hands. Or maybe it's worth the same amount of buying power. That's the point, right? But, you know, your buying power is diminished. I don't know. It is interesting that you brought this. I'd like to understand how they failed to implement it. Did they leave other options open? You know, this is what they're doing.
Maybe that's what it is. They didn't force it yet. That's kind of what that article was saying. They were saying they chose Nigeria because it's the largest African country as like the petri dish to test it out on Africa first and sort of see how will they respond. And maybe what they learned is, hey, we have to make it mandatory. They won't accept it if we give them a choice. We have to make it mandatory. And that could be something now we're going to see, you know, I guarantee you these people running these central banks, which trace back to all the same central banks and power players we're talking about here, are studying this and are going to take some lessons and apply them. We got a couple more comments over on Rockfin I want to read before we get to our last few stories. We're coming down to the end here. I asked before the break, what are you thankful for? And Rainbow High says, I'm thankful for the basics, honestly. I have shelter, food, and drink in my belly, and health is all systems go functional. Grateful for it in these dicey times for all those fronts, just taking it a day at a time. They continued, I'm grateful to all the suppressed truth researchers who help us understand what's really going on with this system. So many of them paid with their lives to bring us good info. So appreciate that. And again, if you want to share anything, whether you're on Rockfin, Odyssey, YouTube, Facebook, about why you're grateful or thankful for today, especially with all the stuff we're talking about, starting out with, hey, there's more vaccinated people dying than unvaccinated, CBDCs. But remember, they're not all being accepted everywhere. They might try to push, but that doesn't mean that we have to accept. Now, we've got time for maybe a few more stories. Mike, I know you wanted to get into the FTX thing. I think this is important to cover because we didn't get into it last week. So let's start there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm so beyond like know what to think about this. And I'm hoping that you'll jump in and say some stuff here. Let me get going on this. How much have you heard about this so far, man? Because there's
I'm fairly familiar. And let's just assume that most of our audience has the basics, that there is this FTX company that is being very irresponsible and a lot of people are losing money. Now, obviously, there's a lot more, you know, branches than just that. But that's kind of the gist of it. We can go from where you want.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it obviously goes further for investors. The FTX, basically, it was a exchange. It was a gateway to the crypto world. It was an exciting marketplace where celebrity ambassadors like Tom Brady invited them to come open accounts and trade digital currencies, and make money, right? Because people didn't know about it. It was a new thing. FTX, in turn, functioned in many ways like the banks and brokers of the traditional finance. And I've got the second article that I want to hit where they own part of a bank, which totally changes things. Nonetheless, but like other crypto exchanges, FTX operated outside the traditional banking system until this recent revelation, which is not included yet. And this created enormous risks. Though they act like banks and brokers, crypto exchanges typically are not subject to the same regulation, insurance, and disclosure rules that product customers protect customers, you know, the ones that people believe in, the FDIC, all that sort of stuff. At some level, the fall of FTX is not a crypto story at all, said a Georgetown University law professor. He says people invested billions in an unregulated financial institution based in a Caribbean island. How could this end well? And I think that's an important thing, just that part, right? You know, they sent money, not really knowing anything about what they were sending money to, except that they would make money. And big faces like Tom Brady pitched it to them. So according to Reuters, at least $1 billion worth of customer funds have vanished from FTX, one of the largest exchanges, under circumstances that they are under investigation. In bankruptcy filings, FTX revealed that it could owe money to more than 1 million people and organizations. This collapse has drawn attention because FTX, like we said, is one of the largest exchanges, and its founder was widely held as a crypto wunderkind and one of the top Democratic donors. A lot of people have gone different ways with that. I don't know that I want to go down that avenue. I'm sure there's a book there. But over the past year, as the overall value of crypto market has plummeted from a peak of more than $3 trillion, other crypto firms have also run into financial trouble. So, you know, this is mostly just about their bankruptcy and how people lost money. And it points to the fact that a lot of money had been donated from its founder, CEO, into Democratic Party coffers.
Yeah, I think that that's a super interesting point. And like, we don't have the capacity here for today's show. Maybe we can do a future video just breaking this down. I haven't done any videos or any content on this yet because it just, you know, there's a lot happening and I know there's other people already kind of in it. But I will add one more link to this, just a mention, and I'll include it in the show notes for those who want to read it. It's been up on my tabs for a couple of days now. I've been trying to get to it, but it adds some more layers to what you're already covering, Micah. This one is from Michael P. Senger, who writes over at Substack. And it's called Sam Bankman-Fried, who is the guy behind FTX, and the Pandemic Industrial Complex, the cynicism of the modern political machine of which Sam Bankman-Fried was a part. And it does get into some of that Democratic funding. It gets into some other different elements, because he also, FTX was also originally listed on the World Economic Forum website as a partner. They've since taken it down, I think, now that things are crashing. But it's just, to me, honestly, this seems like, and this is just maybe my conspiratorial mind, but I think the truth will probably be somewhere near it in the coming weeks and months, that this whole thing seems like some kind of honeypot set up to fail. This guy seems like he is incapable of running anything, and they got celebrities pushing it. They got promoting. Everybody's like, oh, this is why we need regulation. Oh my God, this is, it's such a dangerous Wild West space. I can't believe that this happened, right? It seems like such a perfect storm for people who want to push things like CBDCs. So I'm having trouble with it, but if anybody wants to get into that, I'll include all three links, the two that Micah covered, one from Washington Post.
I'd like to move into that next article, if you don't mind, and just
I got it open
in a minute or two about the crypto firm's FTX ownership of a U.S. bank, just on tail of that last part. So it turns out that the bank that they had a part ownership was Farmington State Bank, Washington State, very tiny bank, didn't even offer online banking or have a credit card. So what's up with that? You know, we got this offshore business owning a stake in a American bank. Turns out this tiny bank's connection to the collapse of FTX is raising new questions about the exchange and its operations. Among them, how closely tied is FTX, which was based in the Bahamas, to the broader financial system? Remember when Lehman's failed? Who would have seen that coming? What else might regulators have missed? And in the hunt for FTX's missing assets, how will Farmington get dragged into the multi-billion dollar bankruptcy? I think it's important to remember that that FTX wasn't the only owner of this. Other banks own this tiny bank. Like, what kind of, like, get what I'm saying? These things are like tables these mines are sitting at. The ties between FTX and Farmington State Bank began in March when Alameda Research, a small trading firm and sister to FTX, invested $11.5 million in the bank's parent company, FBH. At the time, Farmington was the nation's 26th smallest bank. That sounds tiny, but out of 4,800. So think about that. No online banking, no credit card, and they're still the 26th largest bank in the United States. 26th smallest out of 4,800. Its net worth was $5.7 million, according to FDIC. It's unclear how FTX was allowed to buy a state and a U.S. licensed bank, which would need to be approved by federal regulators. Banking veterans say it's hard to believe that regulators would have knowingly allowed FTX to gain control of a U.S. bank. The fact that an offshore hedge fund that was basically a crypto firm was buying a stake in a tiny bank for multiples of its stated book value should have raised massive red flags at the FDIC. You know, the ones who are covering your bank accounts, they didn't see this. State regulators and the Federal Reserve, said Camden Fine, a bank industry consultant who used to head the Independent Community Bankers of America. It's just astonishing that all of this got approved. So I don't know. I think, you know, as we said, this is a huge story that we've just begun to and wanted to hit last episode. We've got a lot of work to do on this, and it's huge. It's got many different angles. It's huge like COVID's huge. I mean, it's huge. It's huge like Lehman Brothers. I don't know where it all goes. I mean, some people are speculating it goes into Ukraine, you know? It goes into funding the war.
There's definitely some weird connection between, like, all the Democratic funding,
donating
the connection to Ukraine,
the
World Economic Forum. Yeah, like, there's a lot of pieces there. And I do hope, and if I have time, I might dive into it in a little bit. But like I said, I'm sure there's others who are dissecting it. But it's one of the stories that you can tell we're not getting the full piece of the puzzle, and it's going to be important. So even if it's something you're not really paying too much attention to, it more than likely will affect you. However, the fallout plays out in the coming days. I think we got time for maybe one more, Mike. I wanted to mention this one. If you got anything else real pressing, we can get into it. I'm just going to hit this headline. I've had it up for a couple of weeks now, but it actually does tie into Ukraine now that you mentioned Ukraine. This was a rumor, a conspiracy theory at the beginning of this whole Ukraine war. We were told that people were like, oh, the U.S. government is funding gain of function labs in Ukraine, or, you know, maybe they're going in there to try to, I don't know what they're doing, right? But this actually has been confirmed now via lawsuits and open records requests from Judicial Watch, who is a sort of conservative group, but they do a lot of legal work. Defense Department records reveal U.S. funding of anthrax lab activities in Ukraine. Judicial Watch announced today, this was November 10th, so a couple weeks ago now, that it received 345 pages of records from the Defense Threat Reduction Agency, part of the U.S. Department of Defense, revealing that the U.S. government has funded anthrax lab activities in a Ukrainian biolab in 2018. Dozens of pages are completely redacted, and many others are heavily redacted. The records show that over $11 million in funding for the Ukraine Biolabs program in 2019. These records were obtained in response to a February 2022 Judicial Watch FOIA request to the Defense Threat Reduction Agencies regarding the funding of Black and Veatch, which I think is a lab out in Ukraine. And it said three phases of work are discussed in the records, several of which are indicated to have occurred, quote, on site at the Ukrainian labs. And they go further into the actual details for anybody who wants to read that. But the point is, it's clear there was anthrax activities going on in this biolab. There was other activities. There may have been COVID research is what some people have speculated, gain of function research. And this is just one more piece of that puzzle.
How would America feel? How would your average Joe feel if, China or Russia or Iran had these factories in Mexico? What would we do?
If competing nations were like, hey, we're going to go plop some gain of function anthrax labs. And I know there's people like, there's nothing and there's no viruses. Well, whatever they're doing, right? How do you think the people respond if some other government start doing that to the U.S.? No, but the U.S. can set up biolabs right next to their enemies, in this case, Russia, and nobody's supposed to worry about it, right? And you're supposed to accept it. It's all good. You know, don't worry about what's happening there. Anybody else does anything to the U.S. and they cry like a little kid on the playground. It's really interesting how that works. But I think that's what I got for today, man. I don't know if you got any. I know you had a few more on the document.
You know, we got more. We always got too much to shove into one show. That's why we thank our supporters for contributing to KPFT, .org. Go there, donate in the name of Live Free, Think Free. Get us more space because they know how much you love us by you giving your love gifts to them. And it keeps us on the air. We don't get any of it. We just get to be broadcast, and we get to get your ideas and our shared musical love and cultural love to a broad audience. That's my main thing right now. And y'all be thankful for everything y'all are thankful for. Maybe take a moment to think about the things that you forgot you are thankful for. Slowing down for a minute. Everybody getting away from the work and being able to have a day or two off, those that can. And those that can't, I feel for you, man. Look for the spot and then try to find a second for just stillness. And
find some way to enjoy it. Yeah, even if you're grinding away today. And if you're somewhere where you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, it's just a good day to give thanks, regardless of whatever else.
Being revealed. There's so much positive going on. There really
is. Well, this is why I called today's episode Give Thanks, because the truth is coming. And that's kind of what I was feeling with that first article. It's like, hey, the Washington Post is even having to admit now that the vaccinated people are getting sick and getting hurt. And I don't wish that on them, But hey, at least now it's not lies being told, right? Yeah. They're slowly revealing the truth. And it's up to each of us, though. It's not like I really have felt this since the beginning of our activism. This is the last thing I'll say, and I'm good to go. That when we started doing the show 10 years ago, or 11 years ago now, that it was just, as you said, about how can we boost the signal, reach more people, share news that people don't have time to read because they're so busy, or stories that we happen to come across that nobody else has seen, or just put our thoughts and opinions there and give you something to think about. So if you're hearing this and you enjoy what we do, share this. As soon as this ends, share the video. Go to the website, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Check out some of our archives. Share those videos if you find them interesting, if you think these conversations are interesting. Even if you don't want to share our show, go look at the website. Go look at the links. Share those links if that's more, you know, attuned to your style. Whatever you do, part of this movement is spreading ideas. It's not just be a passive listener to podcasts and things like that. You're part of this too. You play a role. So I'm giving thanks to all of you out there who are spreading truth, and thank you to those of you out there who are supportive to us. Again, thank you to everybody on Odyssey, Rockfin, Facebook, YouTube, and yeah, we'll see you guys next week. We're going to jam out to some more So Below from Houston. Enjoy your Thanksgiving, Micah.
right where you and me supposed to live on this planet. Don't let Babylon rotate.